Smartphones and social media have changed the way we interact with one another. Texting while riding your bike, capturing someone on video doing something hellacious and then posting it on YouTube, or announcing every single thought that passes through your head on Twitter have become commonplace. When you take a step back, it can all seem like white noise. Smartphones also double as cameras, and so now everyone travels everywhere with a camera, snapping selfies with anyone and everyone they can find. And it's this selfie that has given me pause for thought. What exactly is the person trying to convey when they post a photo of themselves with someone in the public eye? The backstory implies what a lot of people wish for when they meet someone they admire, that the two of you became good friends and the photo is merely the evidence of that wish coming true. But of course, the reality is the picture only captured a moment that probably lasted only a few minutes, if that. Still, posting it on Instagram or Facebook allows your online friends and followers to fill in the details for themselves. As much as I am asked to take photos and selfies with people who like our band, I am also, on the other side, asking for selfies with people I admire. And I exploited this backstory idea of the selfie when we played with Cheap Trick just last month. I got a selfie with each member, Rick Nielsen, Robin Zander, and Tom Peterson. When I posted each pic on Instagram, I made mention that each was now my new best friend. It was a joke, but it also poked fun of the glaring truth. Each of us do wish that we become friends with these people on a deeper level than a quickly shot selfie. I say all this preamble because that's actually happened to me. It happened to me with this episode's guest, Phil Rind of Sacred Reich. I met Phil in 2012 when I was booked to speak at the Wacken Open Air Festival, and Sacred Reich were playing on one of the days. We were staying at the same hotel, and I noticed the band milling around in the lobby. Being an old Sacred Reich fan, I approached them, revealed my fandom for them, and of course asked for a photograph before we parted. But later on, I saw them throughout the day, and finally shared a shuttle with them back to the hotel in the early evening. Phil and I continued our talk into the night once we got back to the hotel, and from there, it was sealed. We've been in touch ever since. For me, this has gone far beyond how I even imagined it going. Despite my job description, I have recognized that I am reclusive. It is one of the reasons why I do this podcast, to put myself out there and engage and get to know people better, the people I would only chit-chat with under regular circumstances. I have many friends in the business and even more acquaintances, but I prefer my own company. And with the exception of JC and Rich, of course, I don't really socialize with anyone in the music biz except for maybe Damien Abraham of Fucked Up. And now if Phil lived in Toronto rather than Phoenix, or if I lived in Phoenix rather than Toronto, then I would count Phil on that short list too. I'm in communication with him more than people who live in my own city. Of course, the icebreaker that led to our friendship was the fact that I've been a huge Sacred Reich fan since the release of their debut album, Ignorance. Ignorance is a thrash classic. In my humble opinion, it almost defines the genre. They followed it up with the equally successful Surf Nicaragua EP and then The American Way. But I'll be honest with you, by the time Independent and Heal were released, I had personally, like a lot of people at the time, strayed from heavy metal in general. Sacred Reich are still at it to this day, and have just announced tours in Europe starting in July and North America in September to celebrate 30 years since the release of Ignorance. What a milestone. And the chance to see Sacred Reich after all these years is something I will not sleep on. I'm just praying we don't have a show to do on September 21st when they hit Toronto. This year, at the Wacken Open Air Festival, Sacred Reich are playing again. But Phil will also be doing spoken word. This is a new endeavor for him, and I suggest everyone who will be at the festival to make sure you watch his show. I'm excited for him, and I'm teeming with curiosity. even though Phil Rind should have been on this podcast ages ago, he's finally here, okay? This is long overdue, but it's a good one. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, Phil Rind of Sacred Reich is on the podcast, and it starts now.
The Daniel Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Daniel's co-op to love for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Down.
I got to know Danko a few years ago when I used my vacation time to follow the band on the road. And I even spent a day with Danko in some European town that escapes me. But we ended up talking about 17th century art, his pet rock collection, the summers he spent as a teenage air traffic controller, his venomous snake collection, his passion for planking, and the night he spent with Ringo Starr's housekeeper. He's a fascinating character with a wealth of stories to share. And I'm a huge fan of Danko, but a bigger fan of his stories.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts.
No!
Phil, how's it going, man?
It's going great, Danko.
Well, it's good to finally have you on the podcast, and you know what? I got to say sorry, because by now you should have been on the podcast like 5 times.
Well, you know, I guess we can start at the beginning, and then you can right your wrong by having me on another 4 times.
I'm more than willing to have you on 4 more times. But yeah, like, I mean, if there's anyone who should be on this podcast 3 or more times and be part of that Black Coffee Brigade club I have, it's you.
Why is that?
Well, because, like, we talk all the time, whether it's on email or message or phone or whatever, and you've never been on the podcast.
Right. Yeah, our conversations are private. We have private conversations.
Yes, but I mean, still, I mean, I should have just said, well, I have actually, I have in the past said, you should be on the podcast. Let's do this on the podcast, or let's take this conversation on the podcast.
And yes, we should debate Beatles versus Rolling Stones on the podcast. We should talk about this on the podcast. I'm like, you know, whatever. Whatever you want to do, man. It's the Danko Jones podcast. I do whatever you want.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you always agree, and then I never follow up.
You're a little busy with stuff. It's okay. I forgive you completely.
Well, I got all the other people on.
Quit beating yourself up. It's okay, Danko.
But, well, actually, it's a good way to start. Now is the best time to start having you on the podcast regularly, because the way you and I met was like 5 years ago at, of all places, Wacken Open Air, which is a pretty metal way to meet somebody.
It is, at a very unmetal hour, like 6 or 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, I know why we were up. I don't remember why you were up.
I was up because, well, the shuttles take an hour and a half or something, an hour to get to the site from the hotel. So
yeah,
I think
that's why we were up too. I was like, what the hell are we doing at 6 o'clock in the morning for a lobby call? And this is very unmetal hour.
But I think I caught the shuttle after you. I think I said, hey, oh, this is too early.
Yes, you sat on my lap on the way back, though.
Yeah, we kind of almost. We shared the shuttle. It was just us. It was just Sacred. It was just the band and me, right?
I think there may have been somebody else in the very back. I don't remember who they were, though.
Yeah, just basically not part of the conversation.
Well, we were sitting up front, right? You sat in between me and the driver. Yeah. And you're like a shift going, good thing you're very svelte.
I had the stick right in between my legs.
Yeah, and you had your laptop and you're cradling your laptop. It was like not the most comfortable drive, but it was interesting.
Well, I did it because I got to be in the shuttle with you guys. It was wild. I was blown away.
And then we went downstairs at the hotel and drank water and looked at Al Jorgensen.
Yeah, for the next 2-3 hours after that. I remember it because you go, hey, let's go outside because I'm from Phoenix and it never rains. And it was raining that night.
Yes.
So, well, the reason why I was at Vakken was because I was doing spoken word shows there, lecturing on KISS. And I even told you guys in the shuttle what I was talking about, how Peter Chris had been dead.
Your Peter Chris conspiracy theory.
And so I kind of did it for you guys in the shuttle because I think it was the first night and I was still kind of getting my bearings on it. So I think I did a little bit of it for you guys trying to prove that he was dead.
Yes.
Whatever. And now this year you're doing spoken word at Vakken, which is amazing.
It's a terrible idea. I don't know what I was thinking.
Well, you know, over the years, you've told me all these crazy Sacred Reich stories, like tour stories and band stories with other bands and shit. So I have to ask you, what can people expect at these spoken word shows that you're doing fairly regularly now, right?
Well, I did one in Phoenix, and then we're doing another one in Phoenix. It's mostly just like a warm-up for Vakken because I don't want to go out there and look kind of silly. So I kind of want to get it together so I make a nice little presentation for the people. So it's mostly just tour stories and drug stories, just kind of like funny little stories. And, you know, I don't know. I think it's like our band was never like a really big band and we're not like some real, you know, we're not like some super famous people. So I think when I tell our little stories, it's more like almost from a fan's perspective. Sometimes you hear people telling stories and they're kind of like in it, you know, and they're like a major character where I'm like more like Zelig, you know, just kind of there by accident and right. Fortunate. So it's a different perspective, I think.
So how many shows do you have under your belt now? Because this is a new thing for you. Oh, you did just
one. Yeah, and then I'm doing another one June 18th. I got some good feedback from some friends at the first show. I mean, the first time I got up there, I spoke for an hour in front of people, and I was shocked that it went by so quickly because an hour seems like a long time and kind of daunting. But it went good, and I just gotta figure out exactly what I want to say, and then just work on the presentation so it's not boring for the folks.
Did you memorize it, or is it kind of like a loose off the top of your head?
Yeah, well, I've been telling the same stories forever to people. I could get a hold of an earshot. So the stories are obviously quite familiar to me. It's just kind of trying to put them together in a way that makes sense and that's entertaining and isn't repetitive or redundant. And I don't know. I guess we'll see. You know, plus the fact that it's going to be a crowd of a bunch of people, international folks from all over, and hopefully that won't be too much of a language barrier and a alcohol barrier. We'll see how it goes. I'm not, you know, luckily I'm not afraid of getting up in front of people, so that's not going to be a problem.
Right. When I did the KISS lecture at Vakken, and Vakken, for people who don't know, is in Germany, so you're getting a lot of people who might not, you know, be so fluent with English, which is the language I was lecturing or speaking in. And so you get a lot of dumbfounded faces staring back at you. But I just kind of just got myself through it.
Yeah. Forge ahead, man. I mean, you took the first step. You just got to keep going. There's no getting around it. And like I said, you know, the first gig I did here, I told like some other stories kind of a little bit about growing up. And I was like, oh, I'm not sure who wants to hear that. I'll stick more to, you know, I think people that might come listen to me kind of want to hear Sacred Reich stories or kind of like band related things. Plus, we'll be at the festival, so I keep it to that. You know, and some people, you know, the lyrics have always been semi-political, so maybe some people are expecting a little bit of that. But I don't really want to fuel that fire and fuel the division. So, you know, I may say something about we got to look past that bullshit and figure out how we're all the same rather than what we're fighting about. But that'll, you know, if people are expecting something like that, I'm not even jumping in there. It's too obvious, too. I mean, I think people can figure out probably what side of the fence I'm on, and certain people are a major embarrassment. There's not much of a debate about it, so.
Well, okay, so you said that, so is the band going to be already on site, like at the festival? You guys are playing vocals?
Yeah, we're playing. So I'll probably do the spoken word thing during the day, and we'll play in the evening.
Oh, wow. So it's just, you're just going to be there for the one day?
Yeah.
Wow. Now, aside from the show in July and then after Wacken, do you kind of see in the back of your head maybe some future, like a string of dates?
I don't know.
Like Henry Rollins, is this in the back of your head?
I don't know if anyone would be interested. So I guess, you know, we'll do Wacken and then I don't know. We'll see. You know, I mean, it's something that we could explore if anyone's interested. I mean, I don't know. So I don't see a big future in it for me, but
I think for me as a fan and just a music fan in general, I would love to see it. I would love to hear it. So I don't know if I'm the medium or someone just kind of a someone who likes that kind of stuff. I don't know if I can't gauge how my taste is going these days, but I'm very interested. Like when I heard online, when I read about it, that you were going to do this, first of all, I said, well, he could pull it off because you tell some hilarious stories that I think, you know, can keep the listener engaged for the entire length of the story. And then you have done stuff, man, like Sacred Reich are in there, a historical band and a legendary band. People want to hear those old stories. You've rubbed shoulders with some heavyweights that a lot of people are still fans of and iconic people. Are you going to be talking about some iconic people in the stories, like to kind of get maybe younger fans who might not be familiar with Sacred Reich?
I mean, you know, people want to hear the stories about, you know, touring with Danzig or touring with Pantera. Like, I don't think people want to hear like Super Duty Sacred Reich stories. I think they, to me, the funnier stories is like our interactions with other people.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, like the first time I met the Metallica dudes. And it's always interesting to me too, because we obviously have a lot of friends from the Bay Area who, you know, Metallica was like the local band at some point, right? And those guys were around and they know them a little bit better, you know, but for people who didn't grow up there, you know, like people like us from Arizona, who they were just huge influences and like our fucking idols. It was like a humongous deal, you know, to see them in person and to meet them for the first time. And it was, and you know, it's funny. It's not always what you expect, and it's often not what you expect. But it was funny. I went and saw Brian Posehn, the comedian, yeah, over the weekend.
Okay.
And he told me a story that they went to see Metallica play at like the Kabuki or someplace. He goes, it was during, you know, Kill 'Em All. It was very early. And he was just starting in a band with some friends. He goes, my hair was kind of short and I looked kind of dorky. And we had one friend with long hair and we were all just kind of dorky. And we told James that we were starting a band and we needed a name. And he said he looked at all of them and he goes, almost. And I was like, yeah. You know, because that dude could be, like, really cutting and really intimidating, you know, especially if you're a big fan.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there was an element of him liking that, you know what I mean? Him using that against other people. Like, I don't think it was in a super negative way. I think it was just, like, in a sarcastic, you know, kind of funny way. Like, you know, people who are semi-bullies, you know, when you used to be like the alpha dog in the group and, you know, you kind of put everybody else down, but it's not like super bad natured. It's just the kind of way things are, like ribbing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's funny. I go, oh, so it wasn't just me.
Yeah. I don't know. I met him once and it wasn't great. It wasn't bad. It just was this thing where he repeated everything we said to him with a that's great, right? Like he was done. He had already spent all his time with a bunch of people. We were the last in line kind of thing.
Right.
But by the time we got to him, he was checked out.
Right. So, he was like, yeah, great, great. Just nodding his head.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he said, where are you guys from? Oh, we're from Toronto. Great place. Okay.
Yeah, like I'm done. I'm done trying to be interested in a bunch of people I don't know.
Exactly.
You can understand, man. Some days are good days. Some days are bad days. Some days you're like, man, it would be really great to eat something right now. How much longer we got?
Yeah, like that's the thing. And, you know, if there's anyone in metal to be intimidated by, it's like, you know, there's a certain... You know, because, yeah, you're right. Like, in terms of heavy metal, there's a whole bunch of alpha dogs backstage, you know, trying to be the coolest guy in the room. But there's only a few people that everybody bows down to. And, you know, Lemmy would be one of them. James Hetfield is another one of them. There's maybe you can count them on one hand. But James Hetfield, I remember when we played the Download Festival in the UK and Lars had... been taken ill. So it was that show where Dave Lombardo subbed in and Joey Jordison. Backstage, everybody was there. All the old, Dimebag was there. Jamie Josta was there. Nikki Sixx was there. The Korn guys were there. Slipknot guys were all there. And Metallica were practicing in the backstage area. So we could all see and hear them with different drummers for the show. And then when they finally were finished, they all came out one by one. So Kirk Hammett came out. Everyone said, hey, Kirk. And they were all cheering. Rob came out. They were all cheering him. Hetfield came out. Nobody said anything. He just walked past everyone. And nobody went up to him. Nobody said anything. They parted the ways. These are like... Like Nikki Sixx, Korn, like Slipknot, like the who's who. And he just walked by and he walked straight into the limo. He didn't say hi to anybody. I could just see, I could see his mouth. All he said to himself was, all right. And he made a fist in the air and he walked to the limo. Nobody bothered him. But for Kirk,
Shocking. It's shocking everybody didn't bow down like in deference, like when he walked by.
Because it wasn't a bunch of fans, like regular fans. It was like all these dudes and all these alpha guys. And it was really interesting. And I just thought, okay, I'm not the only one who's kind of obsessed with this guy.
That was the rock and roll version of King of the Hill. And it was clear who was King of the Hill.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was so impressive. It's one of the most impressive things I've ever seen.
Yeah, and he didn't ask for it. He didn't demand it. It just happened spontaneously.
Yeah,
yes.
And he's not, you know, he's not demanding it either. He's not walking around going, look, you guys owe me this.
That's the ultimate power when you don't have to. It's implied. He doesn't have to prove it to anybody. It's already been proven time and time and time again. It's unquestionable.
Yeah. Yeah. He is definitely the man.
He's gotten a lot nicer too. So, you know, like my last interaction with him was much different. So.
Now, was that at the Metal Blade? Was it 35th anniversary or something?
The 30th anniversary of Metal Blade. Yeah. Yeah,
I saw the photos with you and was Brian Slagle was in it, and
no, it was me and Jameson and your buddy Eddie Trunk, and then the dude from 90210 was like photobombing us.
Oh yeah, right. Dylan.
Luke Perry.
Yeah, that's right.
That was pretty funny.
Well, my buddy Don Jameson was in the photo. That's
yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah, he's a great.
I told you that. I told you that story about him, and I told you a story about Don Jameson and Eddie Trunk.
No, or maybe you did.
I don't know. So we go to the thing, and it's a House of Blues or whatever. And I walk into the dressing room. It's like us and Gypsy Hawk or whatever. So on the door, it says Sacred Reich, Gypsy Hawk. I walk in there, and Don Jameson and Eddie Trunk are in there. And I never met either of them. And I walk in, and they're talking. I look at them, and I go, hey. And they look up, and I go, I point at the door. I go, whose name is on the door? And they both fucking put their heads down and walked out.
Really?
And I was totally playing with them. I figured he's a comedian. You have a sense of humor about it. But they kind of put their heads down and walked out. And I saw them later. I go, you know, I was totally fucking with you. I let them go. I didn't stop them. I didn't stop them. But I came up to them later. I said, you know, I was just fucking with you. I was just fucking around. So, whatever. I thought it was fun.
I know. Don's got a good sense of humor. He's definitely can roll with the punches.
Yeah. I told him later. He goes, oh, dude, it's cool. I'm like, all right. I just didn't want you to think I'm a dick. I mean, I'm kind of a dick, but not in the way that you thought I was a dick at that point.
Right. What did the Gypsy Hawk guys do?
Oh, no one was in there. It was just those two. They were in there by themselves. And I walked in. I said, hey. Like, get out of my dressing room.
Oh, man.
It was funny.
Well, so there's a lot on your plate besides the spoken word gigs. You mentioned you guys are going to be playing.
Is that a fat joke, Danko?
Sorry?
Is that a fat joke? There's a lot on your plate?
No.
I'm so sensitive.
No, but I mean Sacred Reich, 30th anniversary. you're more busier than you have been in, can I say, decades.
Did you say more busier?
No, I said more busy.
No, you'll hear it back. You said more busy. Your education is too good for that. Come on, Danko.
You know what? Sometimes I'm under the gun on these podcast episodes. I'm too aware that I'm speaking into a mic and...
Well, when did I become the English police now? That's the real question. So, yeah, so I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Listen,
have a bunch of stuff going on.
I don't mind being policed. I do appreciate it.
In your parlance, I have a lot on my plate, apparently. So,
Oh, man, you're not going to shake that.
I was just having fun with you. Yeah, we got a bunch of crap going on.
I feel like Eddie Trunk and Don Jameson in your dressing room right now.
I'm channeling my inner James Hetfield. Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff going on. We got, so we got 4 weeks a tour in Europe, which is like a long time for us because we really basically have been doing them maybe about 2 weeks. And then we have our first U.S. and North American shows in like 20 years. We're doing 3 weeks in the States, a couple dates in Canada. And we're going to reissue do a 30th anniversary edition of Ignorance coming out, I think, end of July in Europe. And then a few weeks later in the States and North America. And right now we're kind of in negotiation to get our whole catalog back. Because there's been an issue, like, contractually with different record companies. So the records haven't been available because we haven't had the rights to them. So I think we're on the verge of getting everything back.
Holy smokes.
So that's really cool. And then we'll go from there. And then, you know, and then also, like, we're not opposed to maybe doing some new stuff, which is for us a kind of change of plan. Like, we've always been adamant that we weren't going to do any new music. And I don't know, like, our attitudes have changed. So we'll see what's on the horizon.
So when you say we, do you mean you?
No, I mean we.
Really?
Well, I mean, you know, there's still four of us, so.
Because, you know, behind the scenes, I've been asking you for years, you should totally fucking do more Sacred Reich stuff, like new stuff. And you've always said to me, off the record, now it's on the record, you've always said, nah, nobody wants to hear that. And Jesus Christ, there's like, I bet this North American tour is going to be real. It'll open your eyes to see how many people have entered the metal fold, you know, since you guys have taken a break from it.
Well, we'll see. But there's a lot, you know, like, you know, thinking about doing new music isn't just doing new music. It's making a commitment to do new music and support it. You know, and like Wiley, our guitar player, just opened a second restaurant. So it's pointless to try to do something if you really can't get behind it. So we need to talk about, if we do something, is there an opportunity to support it properly? You know, what are people available for, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, just getting in the mindset of, hey, you know, can we even think about talking about doing new stuff and all that it entails is definitely a we thing, right? And then, do people want to hear it? I don't know. I'm to the point where I don't care. I've always been more or less to the point that I don't care, because people go, oh, there's a big audience. I'm like, well, how do you know there's a big audience? How do any of us know? We don't. We can make an assumption that there's an audience. But my point is, look, when we made our first record, there was no audience. No one knew who the fuck we were. And we did it anyhow because we didn't care, because we knew we had to do it. So you just have to do it with the right attitude. You have to do it because you want to. You think the time's right. You have something to say. And then you go from there. So there's all that crap.
Yeah. No, I understand. But I look
I wasn't telling you. I was telling all the people that listen to your podcast.
No, right, right. No, but I mean. but I mean, like, I look at the tours that are really successful these days. Creator, Testament, Sepultura, you know. Those tours are like doing amazing numbers.
Sure, but those are bands that have been active all these years and putting out new music.
Yes, yes. But
so that's different.
But they're from the era that Sacred Reich were a main event band.
Right, but those were all bands that were also bigger than our band at the time too, and currently bigger than our band. So it's like apples and oranges. So
okay, fine. You're just gonna volley back at everything I say.
I'm just saying, like, I understand where you're coming from, and and this is my contribution. Isn't that what a discussion is? Yeah. Deco, come on.
No, I know. But I'm glad to hear that it may happen, because listen, there's some dudes putting out music that kind of shouldn't be putting out music anymore. Because of one thing or another, they just don't have the chops, you know, they're just not, the voice isn't there anymore, you know, they've changed direction. But when I heard
is there anybody specifically that's coming to mind?
Yeah, but I'm not gonna say anything. I can't say it on the record. But I mean, listen, your voice, your contribution to the Teenage Time Killers from, what was it, 2015, a couple years back, was spot on. If you had told me that was from like 1990, I wouldn't have batted an eye. I would have believed you, because your vocals are just that current and fresh and together.
You know, the funny thing about that is I was probably about 75%, and I was bummed. I'm like, I know I could do better. Like, you know, Reed asked me to do that thing, and I was like, great. And like the week before I got sick, like asthma and a cold, and I went to California anyhow, I couldn't back out, you know, and I did it when I was sick, and I was like, oh man, I can hear it in my head. I know I can do better. But I think my voice has actually gotten better, and I'm more confident as a singer. So if we do anything moving forward, I'm pretty sure the vocals will be kick-ass. You know, but... So the thing is, too, is, like, I'm super guilty of overthinking things, generally speaking. So I can obviously overthink, like, what does Sacred Reich even sound like in 2017? You know, should I kowtow to whatever expectation that our fan base may have of what we sound like? So there's, you know, all those things, like 20 years of not making new music. You know, what do we sound like?
Yeah.
And I finally just came to the realization we sound like whatever it is that we put out, and it'll be fine. Which is pretty obvious, I think, to probably most people. But to me, I had to work through the process and get to that thing. So we'll see.
But it's not as if you've been, like, just listening to jazz music for the past, you know, 20 years, and then suddenly you're getting back into your old band. You've been current. You've been up on the current bands and trends and stuff like that. You know, your ear is still attuned to, you know, what a metalhead's ear would be, right?
No.
It's been jazz?
It hasn't been jazz, but, you know, like when we were doing earlier, like, look, if you listen to Ignorance, you're like, man, those guys listen to a lot of Slayer, aren't they? It's obvious, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, people say, I don't know, whatever people want to think about what happened later, you know. But I don't sit around and listen to the new Havoc record or whatever is currently going on, you know. Like, I'll check out new Gojira a little bit, you know, new Sepultura. But I'm not driving around my car listening to the newest, latest metal records. So my frame of reference is still Ride the Lightning, Rain and Blood, Hell Awaits, Master of Puppets, you know, from a metal perspective. So I don't really know. I mean, I guess we'll see what it's going to sound like. And I'm certainly not as angry as I was when I was 17. And I think back, I'm like, what was I so angry about anyhow? You know, I'm like a white male, you know, middle-class kid. But, yeah, I guess a lot of people that age are just upset, so...
Oh, you're just frustrated with your place in life at that point?
Yeah, the injustices of the world.
Use the words, yeah, justice and society is a good one in the next set of new lyrics.
Yes, yes.
So you're coming to Toronto in September, and I really don't know if I'll be here for that.
Well, you'll be somewhere.
I will, but I want to see you guys in Toronto. That's what I like. That would be the shit for me. I would freak out.
Yeah, it would be great. It would suck to go all the way to Toronto and like not have you be there.
I know. Well, there's one time, like, because I'm on Marty Friedman's solo album, and the night he actually played in Toronto, he hadn't played there in years. We were at the airport flying out of Toronto. And I was on the plane going, he's probably going on stage right now, and I could have sung the song with him. But that's
I should have got a flight out in the morning.
Oh man! So I wanted to bring up Wiley's Rehab Burger. I didn't know he opened up another one. So things are going good in Phoenix.
Yeah, he's kicking ass on the burger front. He. It's been several years. Well, I guess since 2007, probably. It wasn't 2007. I can't remember. But it's been several years that he's been open in Scottsdale. And they just opened another store in Tempe by Arizona State University. So it's going really great. They got great burgers and food, great atmosphere, great service. So, yeah, he's worked in the restaurant industry a long time. And they finally opened their own place. So. It's been wonderful for him.
I need to check it out. I mean, I love my hamburgers. So,
yeah. Well, when you come to Phoenix, we'll take you over there. It's pretty easy hookup. I know a guy.
Yeah. Do you get free food when you get in there? Like, hey, Phil, here you go.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Well, I think he's got two other partners. If they gave free food to everybody they met every time, they'd be out of business.
Oh, right. No, I got you.
I don't walk in there with the expectation of eating for free either. Have you seen me? I can pack away some food. I don't want to bankrupt the joint. But like when other bands and shit come through, I always take them to Wiley's.
Yeah. I think we're good.
Are we good? I mean, I know we're good.
And
it was my pleasure speaking with you.
All right, Phil. Thank you for this, man.
All right, man.
Okay. Thanks, Phil.
You got it, Danko. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later, man.